One of the strangest ideas about the Dharma is that it's all about being accepting and non-judgmental. This comes from getting things backwards. We understand that things are inconstant and impermanent. And there's also the desire for happiness. If you put the inconstancy first, then that means you have to learn how to scale back your desire for happiness. To realize that whatever you might want is going to be inconstant, and learn how to be okay with that. But that's got things backwards. When the Buddha taught inconstancy, it was basically a judgment. Anything inconstant is stressful. Anything stressful is not worthy of being held on to as you or yours, because it wouldn't make you happy. Your desire for happiness comes first. And that, the Buddha says, should be honored. And that's what he did in his life. He wanted a happiness that wasn't subject to aging, illness, or death, sorrow, or anything negative at all. And he set out to find it, and he found it. So the story of his life tells us that the desire for happiness should be taken seriously, and it should be honored. Now here we're not talking about simple hedonism, where you just pursue pleasures. Whatever pleasure captures your fancy, you run for it. That's not what the Buddha's talking about. You take your desire for happiness seriously. You think about it. And you realize that you want something that's long-term. For it to be long-term, it can't depend on anybody's suffering. So you have to take other people's happiness into consideration as well. And you're going to have to be really careful about how you act. Want to make sure that what you do is conducive to happiness. And that it doesn't harm anybody. These are the basic principles that underline the basic qualities of the Buddha: his wisdom, his compassion, his purity. And that's one of the messages of the teaching, is that you develop wisdom, compassion, and purity by being mature in your pursuit of happiness. You look at the rest of the Buddha's life as he was pursuing happiness, and you realize he was passing judgment. He would do something and then pass judgment on it. Is this conducive to happiness? Is this what I want? If it's not, what should I change? So he's passing judgment with a purpose of changing his actions, improving his actions. He was basically pursuing excellence. When he later on gave a list of epithets for nirvana, nirvana actually being one of the epithets for the goal, it came down to five categories. One is it is a state of consciousness. There's an awareness. But it's an awareness without an object. The image the Buddha gives is a light beam. It says, suppose there's a house with a window on the east wall. When the sun rises, the sunbeams go through the window on the east wall. Where do they land? They land on the western wall. What if there's no western wall? Well, they land on the ground. What if there's no ground? Back in those days, they felt that the earth was supported by water. So they said it lands on water. What if there's no water? But then it doesn't land. The image is of a light beam that doesn't land. When it doesn't land, you can't see it, because it's not reflecting off anything. But it's bright in and of itself. So there's consciousness. There's freedom. That comment we had today, that is being outside of space and time, like, sounded like you're being frozen. That's like saying, well, there's just one frozen moment in time. That's not getting out of time. That's being trapped in time. Outside of space and time means you're totally free. Another quality is bliss, it's true happiness. Another quality is truth. In other words, it doesn't change on you. It's not deceptive. And finally, the fifth is its excellence. It's the ultimate, it's beyond. So as we follow the Buddha, we're following excellence in our pursuit of happiness. Nowadays, when they talk about the pursuit of excellence, it's either in terms of sport or in terms of making fancy watches. But that's a very limited idea of excellence. You devote all your energies to mastering a game, or you devote all your energies to making something that tells an accurate time. But there's so many more worthwhile things to be doing. And the Buddha found the most worthwhile excellence to pursue, which is a happiness that is harmless and that never disappoints. But as many people have noted, what descriptions they have of it don't sound all that inviting. One of the first discussion groups I led when I came back here to the States on the Four Noble Truths went through the Four Noble Truths in order, 1, 2, 3, 4. We got to the Third Noble Truth, we talked about nirvana. And we got to the Fourth Noble Truth, and we ended up talking about jhana. And everybody in the group said jhana sounded a lot more appealing than nirvana. And so maybe the words are more appealing, or the mental images we have are more appealing. But when someone's really mastered jhana, and really started contemplating it, you begin to realize that it has its drawbacks. On the one hand, you get really addicted to the pleasure. It feels really, really good. But you also realize that in order to maintain that pleasure, that sense of stillness, you have to work hard. It's an unending effort. And when that hits you, that's when you think, maybe something unfabricated would be better. And when the opening comes, you go for it and realize it is much better. Think of Ajahn Mahabhu comparing the state of the luminous mind that at first he thought was awakening to the actual experience of awakening. He said, there's like a pile of shit, the luminous mind compared to the awakening. So when you get there, your sensitivity toward happiness, your sensitivity to what's involved in fabricating a life, fabricating your experience, gets so acute that you really do see that this is the ideal alternative, the unfabricated. Until then, there's a tendency in the mind to say, well, I could imagine something I'd prefer. But look at all your imaginations. We've been led by our imaginations for how long? We don't know how long. It's countless aeons that we've been going around and around and around, led by our desire to think up this, think up that. I can imagine something better than this. I can imagine something better than that. There's this tendency of the mind to keep flowing out. Well, the Buddha called that asava. And we're so addicted to that, not the idea of a pleasure that doesn't require that we do anything. It sounds very disorienting. A pleasure that doesn't require feeding. It sounds very dissimilar to our ideas of happiness, which all depend on feeding in one way or another. So from the outside, nirvana may not sound all that good, but the Buddha is saying again and again, if you think that there's going to be any disappointment or any sense of dissatisfaction at all with nirvana, that's wrong view. So in the meantime, what do? Well, we follow the Four Noble Truths in refining our powers of judgment. Because the Four Noble Truths themselves are standards for judgment. Wherever there's suffering, you got to look for its cause. Because it's something you want to get past. You want to bring about the end of suffering. It's not something to continue playing with. Of course, the Buddha's analysis of suffering, the five clinging aggregates, when you actually think about what it means, goes against the grain. In other words, we cling to the things that we want to see as ours, want to see as us, because we like them. And yet the Buddha is saying, okay, that's suffering. So we have to try to comprehend what he's saying, what he means. Then we have to abandon our cravings. We like our cravings an awful lot. As the Buddha said, everywhere we go with craving as a companion. So he tries to wean us away from that harmful friendship by describing the pleasures of the path, especially the pleasures of concentration. Try to make these your friends. And what you're doing is you're taking some desires and you're making them part of the path. The desire to be skillful, the desire to find a happiness that's not subject to the drawbacks of sensuality. So you're continuing to foster some desires. You're continuing to flow toward the concentration. But as you get more and more used to it, you realize, okay, this is a better pleasure. Value judgment, but a good one. And you find that there are layers as you peel them away. That too is a value judgment. You begin to realize that some states of concentration are more solid, more expansive, more peaceful than others, and you go for them. This is what lifts your sights as to what is possible. So many of us are afraid of pleasure because we've enjoyed pleasures in the past and then been really disappointed by them. Or we've gotten really heedless as we enjoy the pleasure and we suddenly find ourselves in danger. So there's that part of the mind that has some trepidation around pleasure. But when you find a more reliable pleasure like this, and it really is more reliable, after a while you begin to let go of your fear of it, and you find that you can really enjoy it. There is still a little bit of heedlessness possible with a concentration as you just hang out. But it's a lot better than hanging out with our normal pleasures. Pleasures of sight, sound, smells, taste, tactile sensations. So here again, you're making a value judgment. We're not here just to rest content with whatever we've got. As the Buddha said, the secret to his awakening was discontent with regard to skillful qualities, to say nothing of unskillful qualities. Anything that's unskillful in his mind, he would drop it. As for what was skillful, he said, if there's anything more I can do, anything that I have to master that I haven't mastered yet, I'll go for it. So that pursuit of excellence, that's what enabled him to find the Dharma. And we realize that this is a pursuit of excellence that really is satisfying. You see people pursuing excellence in sport, and then they get too old to play the game. And the later part of their lives is a real disappointment. They got really good at one thing, and then they can't do it anymore. But in terms of the meditation, you keep on doing this to your last breath. And it's still possible to achieve great things. There are stories in the canon of people who gained awakening at death. There was one of the Buddha's relatives who became a stream enter at death. And when the Buddha happened to mention that that was what he had attained, his other relatives were upset. And he said, well, if he can do it, then anybody can do it. That's actually good news. This is something we can keep on pursuing and pursuing. And there may be some setbacks. But we can keep at it. And if we're observant, use our ingenuity. Or as the Buddha would say, if you commit to it, and keep on reflecting again and again, you find that there are better and better levels of practice you can do. And you see that they really are better. And you go for the best that you can manage. This is one area where going for the best will never disappoint. So hold in mind the fact that the goal, nirvana, really is excellent. And even though you don't focus on the goal, the whole point of the having a path is that you focus on each step of the path. But be confident that the path is leading you to a place that you can't even imagine how good it is. It's that good. And it's way better than anything else.